This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The question comes where to go from here. The president of the United States thought that maybe the solution is to take the Palestinians out of Gaza and rebuild Gaza. That is, of course, legally, morally unacceptable.
That was Ambassador Ayman Zain al-Din, former director of the media department at the Egyptian Foreign Ministry, on the U.S. stand and Arab reaction to Gaza. Details coming up. Also, a car bomb exploded today at a hotel in the central Somalia city of Baldawin, killing at least six people. And officials from the United States and Ukraine are in Saudi Arabia for talks on ending Ukraine's war with Russia. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Authorities in the DRC are offering a $5 million reward for help in arresting M23 rebel leaders as government forces struggle to contain their advance. Hubert Kabasu Babu Katolondi, former governor of Kasai Province in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, tells me instead of imposing bounties, face-to-face dialogue would be much more preferable.
As you so eloquently put it, what does it mean? It signifies that the regime of Kinshasa is sort of confused. They don't know exactly what they want to do because everybody has been insisting, like the UN, even though they leveled sanctions against Nanga and others, the UN, EAC, SADC, joint SADC-EAC summit, even the African Union. They insist, they emphasize that in the context of the dual processes of Luanda, with President Lourenco facilitating dialogue, and the Nairobi process, President Tshisekedi has to talk to Mr. Nanga and Mr. Makenga, who's the military chief of all the operations there, and Mr. Bisimwa. It's quite a confusing contradiction because all these organizations that I mentioned earlier on insist that Mr. Tshisekedi must talk to Mr. Nanga. Yet, Mr. Tshisekedi comes up with a bounty on the person he's supposed to sit with to solve the problem.
So, as an analyst of African politics, where does Rwanda fit in all this?
From my perspective as a trained political scientist, Rwanda is only a consequence, one of the consequences of the authoritarian drift in DRC, which has allowed Congo to become vulnerable, different vulnerabilities. Rwanda is one of the symptoms of the weakness of the Congolese state. The national army, any state in the world, any modern state in the world, one of the elements that reflect or mirror the maturity and the strength and efficiency of the state, it's its army. Tell me how you manage the army and I'll tell you what kind of state you are. So if the national state has to subcontract genocidal forces, has to subcontract militias and trained militias, give them weapons, give them ammunitions and mercenaries. So they create some kind of insecurity in their region. And Rwanda intervenes saying our security is threatened, number one, by genocidal forces who associate with the Congolese army and other militias. But the Congolese government says Rwanda is part of the problem. Rwanda wants to balkanize us. Rwanda wants to occupy our territory to illegally exploit our minerals. But as long as you don't have national cohesion inside the Congo, as long as you have a crisis of legitimacy, there's no way you can address the issue of Rwanda.
And the M23 armed group is pushing and pushing and pushing,
it is pushing
into the Congo.
Yeah.
According to the latest today, not only have the northern South Kivu provinces, Goma and Bukavu, but they are also entering to the Naiboyondo village, 100 kilometers north of Goma.
Yeah,
where is this heading? What do you see the end game here?
No, they are, as an analyst, I will only point to two options. The first option is that somehow, by what they call in Latin Deus ex machina, by some power of God or some factor, Tshisekedi comes to his rational sense and then he realizes that he has to talk to Nanga. But if he talks to them, then there could be a compromise where, because people say, let's just, it's simple, let's just go back to constitutional democracy. You have to comply with the constitution. If he talks to Nanga, not only Nanga and Joseph Kabila as well, Moise Katumbi, the former governor of the Greater Katanga, and many other opposition leaders who are now in exile now. And this dialogue here will be easier dialogue. But the second option, which is the worst case scenario, is that he refuses to talk to Kabila, to Nanga and others. And these people are getting stronger now because they've recruited more than 4,000 Congolese soldiers. And recently, I think it was yesterday, thousands of Wazalendos who used to be with the government army now have joined Mr. Nanga's AFC M23. And above that, more importantly, the whole arsenal left behind, including combat helicopters, missiles, tank, and so on and so forth. So these people have got formidable firepower. Even if Rwanda does intervene, they are capable of going to Kinshasa. So that would be the second option. But we have to be peacemakers here. We choose peace. We say the first option is best. It's not too late.
That was Kabasu Katalun, the former governor of Kasai Province in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. He talked to me from our studios here in Washington, D.C. Authorities say a boat has capsized in southwestern Democratic Republic of Congo and killed 25 people, many of them soccer players. The Associated Press reports that a provincial spokesman says the players were returning from a match in Maidombe Province on Sunday night when the vessel capsized. The spokesman suggests that the poor visibility may have been a factor. At least 30 other people survived. Deadly boat accidents are common in the Central African country, where late-night travel and overcrowded vessels are often blamed. The DRC's rivers are a major means of transport, especially in remote areas where infrastructure is poor or non-existent. Tensions have risen sharply after the arrest of several senior officials from the opposition group SPLMIO by security forces. A fragile power-sharing arrangement between President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar has threatened due to conflicts among their allied troops in Upper Nile State. South Sudan, the world's youngest nation, ended a five-year civil war in 2018 with a power-sharing agreement between Kiir and Machar. And today, Uganda deployed special forces in South Sudan's capital, Juba, to maintain security. Felix Kulagi, the spokesperson of Uganda People's Defense Force, or UPDF, confirmed to VOA the troops are in Juba. He told journalist Mamer Abraham Kuat, the mission is to ensure security in the capital, and the length of stay will depend on the situation on the ground. The South Sudan government and armed forces have not responded to repeated VOA requests for comment. For more insight, VOA's Pauline Diho spoke to Riet Tang, a South Sudanese National Legislative Assembly member and deputy chairperson of the National Committee on Foreign Relations, SPLMIO.
The current situation in Juba Paul is very tense. There is a lot of tension in town, and a lot of senior government officials from the SPLMIO have been arrested, including the Minister of Petroleum, the head of the military of the SPLMIO, and a number of people were arrested. And the house that belonged to the first vice president, Dr. Machar, has been sieged for the last few days, and no movement, nobody's allowed to go inside his compound. So things are really getting into a wrong direction. But the problem is the lack of political will from the government. I would say that what brings all this crisis is because government does not want to implement the peace agreement, specifically the security arrangement that can allow the country to have a national army by unifying all the forces. The government de-escalated the situation by sending more troops to Nasser town, which has been a sport where the civilian have been continuously fighting with the military. And this is in violation to the peace agreement, the security arrangement, because we have mechanisms set up to deploy those armed forces. We have the unified force. Some of them were graduated, and the government refused to give them arm and weapon. And then instead, they use militia that belong to certain tribe and taking them to NASA.
Just for the record, you are a member of SPLM-IO.
Correct. I am a member of the SPLM-IO. I'm the deputy chairperson on the National Committee for Foreign Relations.
I've also listened to people from the government who said that SPLM-IO has sinister motives. They're not as genuine as they claim to be. They are trying to do some things that undermine the current peace arrangements that are there. How do you respond to that?
That is unfounded. Because as we speak, SPLM-IO have no power in Juba. You can see right now, because our minister has been arrested and we can't do anything about it. And because the national security is aligned to the president. And for anyone to say that the SPLM-IO that has his leader, leader in Juba, for example, put in one place, in the office and the residence. He can't go anywhere. He can't go to the church. He can't even attend wedding. And he cannot even go for medical attention. For the last 5 years, Dr. Eka has been sick, and he was not allowed to go outside the country. So anyone who is saying the SPLM-IO have agenda, I think he has something that they want to use so that they can do what they want to do.
As a member of SPLM-IO, if you had an opportunity to talk to President Salva Kiir Mayardit, what would you tell him?
I would tell the president that he has to live up to his word, because he's been saying several times that he does not want to return the country back to war. And I wish he have to live up to his word and to show to the people of South Sudan that he's not taking this country back to war, because he has the power to do so.
That was Reed Tang, a member of South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly and Deputy Chairperson of the National Committee on Foreign Relations, SPLM-IO. He spoke to VOA's Paul Indiho. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs, and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. We'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. A car bomb exploded today at a hotel in the central Somali city of Baldawein in a militant attack that had killed at least 6 people, including 2 prominent traditional elders. The Associated Press reports the explosion targeted the Cairo Hotel, which houses traditional elders and military officers involved in coordinating the government's offensive against the militant group Al-Shabaab. The blast was followed by intense gunfire as attackers stormed the hotel, engaging security forces. Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab frequently launches bombings and gun attacks in the fragile Horn of Africa nation as it tries to topple the government and establish its own rule based on its strict interpretation of Islamic Sharia law. Tanzania's health ministry has confirmed its first 2 cases of mpox, the first time the virus has been detected in an outbreak that has hit several other African countries. The French news agency AFP reports that 2 people exhibiting symptoms were isolated and tested on Sunday, including a truck driver who traveled from a neighboring country. The African Union's health agency last week said 6,034 cases of mpox have been confirmed since January in 22 countries, resulting in 25 deaths. The mpox virus can be transmitted between humans through close physical contact. The illness causes fever, muscular aches, and large boil-like skin lesions and can be very deadly. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, called on the international community to support the Arab League plan for reconstruction of Gaza, countering a proposal by the U.S. President Donald Trump to take over Gaza and displace its residents. But U.S. National Security Council spokesperson Brian Hughes said the Arab plan released Tuesday does not address the reality that Gaza is currently uninhabitable and residents cannot humanely live in a territory covered in debris and unexploded ordnance. Hughes said President Trump stands by his vision to rebuild Gaza without Hamas. Ambassador Ayman Zain al-Din, former director of the media department at the Egyptian Foreign Ministry, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohammed al-Shenawi what options Arab states have if that is the final U.S. position.
I think what the U.S. National Security Council spokesperson tried to say is that he was describing the situation in Gaza. It is, of course, a very terrible situation. People cannot humanely live in those conditions. America trying to describe where things are. But the question comes where to go from here. The president of the United States thought that maybe the solution is to take the Palestinians out of Gaza and rebuild Gaza. That is, of course, legally, morally unacceptable, of course, because this is their land. The people of Gaza want to stay in their land. You cannot uproot people from where they live by making their life impossible. Maybe that's Israel's plan, but this shouldn't be something that the international community backs, supports, or provides cover for. Even in practical terms, the president and the United States government said that their proposal is to move them elsewhere and build cities for them. How long will this take? How much cost would that entail? That's a big matter. And building cities is not exactly what needs to be done. You need to build an economy around those cities. And people don't just need housing, but they need farmland, they need businesses, they need shops, services. This is something that is going to take years and years to achieve. On the other hand, Gaza is their land. They have their farmlands there. They need to repair them, but they have them. They have the roads, schools that need to be repaired, but everything exists already. It's a huge undertaking to bring it back to life, but building a new life for over 2 million persons moving them out of Gaza, even if we set aside the moral and the legal and the legitimacy aspects of the matter, in practical terms, this is an impossible task to move them elsewhere and build cities. How long will that take? On the other hand, the plan the Arabs have includes a short-term exercise in building temporary housing to house the Palestinians and provide for their necessities, and then starting reconstruction by employing Palestinians so that builds a local economy alongside the reconstruction and making this positive loop where reconstruction creates an economy and economy brightens the future possibilities of life in Gaza. So I think the United States will ultimately come around the proposal presented by the Arab countries.
But Israel also rejected the Arab summit plan. So what options do Arab states have if Israel and the United States reject this plan?
Well, we will have to explain to the United States why the proposal made by the president is not something that can happen, and why the proposal the Arab countries have developed through a very arduous process of hard work to construct this very elaborate and detailed plan. This is the only way out. This is the only way to move from here to a more stable situation. And Israel should not have a veto. Israel has plans for Gaza. Israel might be interested in annexing Gaza. So they will veto any proposal that would make annexing Gaza less doable. And this veto shall not be exercised. We will not accept that. And the international community, by the way, the whole international community is on the side of the Arab countries. Of course, it's now mainly an Arab initiative, but it has received wide welcome in Europe, in the third world, the global south. Countries from Latin America, from Asia, from Africa do support this idea. So I would suggest that with time and not very far off, hopefully, the United States will come around and see the merits of this idea, the plan. And I think Israel will have to be forced to accept it and not try to veto the plan.
That was Ambassador Ayman Zain al-Din, former director of the media department at the Egyptian Foreign Ministry, speaking to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. Officials from the United States and Ukraine are in Saudi Arabia for talks on ending Ukraine's war with Russia. The Ukrainian side expected to present a partial ceasefire plan with Russia. The Ukrainian plan includes halting long-range missile strikes and a truce covering the Black Sea. U.S. Secretary of State Mark Rubio is leading the U.S. delegation, and Andriy Yerak, Ukraine's presidential chief of staff, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Andriy Syba are on the Ukrainian delegation. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching is in Jeddah to cover the talks, and she has this report from the first day.
U.S. and Ukrainian officials kicked off talks Tuesday in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, as President Donald Trump pushes to secure a peace deal ending the Russian-Ukraine war. Andrew Yermak, chief of staff to Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, told reporters that Ukraine is ready to do everything to achieve peace. Ukraine's proposal includes suspending long-range missile strikes and a ceasefire in the Black Sea. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has told reporters the U.S. hopes to resolve the part to Ukraine during Tuesday's talks. Nike Chin, VOA News, Jeddah, Saudi Arabia.
That was VOA Nike Ching, who is traveling with Secretary of State Mark Rubio. You can find updates on the talks in Saudi Arabia on voanews.com and all on our VOA Africa social media. The Chagos Islands are one of the last vestiges of the British Empire. They are currently home to a key U.S. military base. But under pressure from the United Nations, the U.K. looks set to hand sovereignty of the islands to Mauritius. Critics say the deal would compromise the security of the region in the face of a growing threat from China, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
The Chagos Islands, about 2,500 kilometres east of Madagascar, have been a British colony since 1814. They've been administered from Mauritius, which argues it was illegally forced to give them away in return for its own independence in 1968. Britain forcibly expelled the Chagos Islands population in the 1960s and 70s to make way for a US military base on Diego Garcia, one of the largest islands in the archipelago. In 2019, the International Court of Justice said Britain should cede control of the islands to Mauritius. Now, London is seeking to finalise such a deal. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer told lawmakers last month it was vital to secure the future of the US base.
Without legal certainty, the base cannot operate in practical terms as it should. That is bad for our national security, and it's a gift to our adversaries.
It's reported that Britain will cede sovereignty of the Chagos Islands and pay Mauritius around $116 million a year for 99 years to lease back Diego Garcia and allow the military base to remain. US President Donald Trump said last month that he was inclined to approve the deal. It also has the backing of India, which has close ties to Mauritius. But there are security concerns. Britain's Conservative Opposition Party has described the proposed plan as a strategic disaster for Britain. China has a burgeoning economic relationship with Mauritius. Some fear those ties could compromise the US base on Diego Garcia. Evan Fowler is from the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China, which focuses on threats from Beijing.
Mauritius owes China quite a lot. It uses that to seek sort of political advantage. That area is strategically important to us, and the Chinese understand this too. The Chinese have already...
That was a report by Henry Ridgewell, reporting from London. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Patrick Deya, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.